Hi, my name's Laura Adams and I'm a guide for London Walks and a Blue Badge guide. Today I'm going to talk about a great pestilence that hit London in the spring of 1665. It brought with it a wave of terror, and in the course of a few months it was to claim the lives of around 1 in 5 Londoners. It was London's dreadful visitation, the Great Plague. Now, plague was no newcomer to the city of London, and its history can actually be traced back to the 1300s when the Black Death, which was a truly terrible pandemic, swept across Eurasia. It arrived in Europe in 1347, and over the next 5 years it was to kill around 20 million people, and that was about half the population of Europe, and it changed the whole structure of medieval society. From then on, plague was a regular visitor to London, and in the 16th and 17th centuries there were particularly severe outbreaks, roughly about every 20 years. There was one in 1603, 1625, and most recently there had been an outbreak in 1636. So people were very aware that it could come back at any time. Now, before we talk about the Great Plague of 1665, let's look at what exactly this disease was and how it would have spread. Now, I say was, but in fact, the plague actually still exists in certain parts of the world, though thankfully it can now be treated with antibiotics and very few people actually die of it. What Londoners weren't aware of at the time is that the Great Plague was predominantly bubonic plague. There are actually three types of plague. There's pneumonic, septicemic and bubonic. And bubonic is the most common. Until recently, there was great debate as to what London's plague really was. But in 2016, when work was taking place on the Crossrail project, archaeologists discovered a mass burial pit at what had been the new churchyard. And that's near where Liverpool Street Station is today. After extensive examination, bacterial DNA was found in the teeth of some of the corpses, and this proved conclusively that they had actually died from the bubonic form of the disease. This particular plague was caused by fleas, and the fleas lived on the backs of the black rats, and the rats had come up off the ships. But how exactly were the fleas infecting the people? Well, in simple terms, the flea would feed upon its host, which was the rat, and its bloody meal, which contained the plague bacteria, which was called Yersinia pestis, would form a clot in the flea's stomach, which meant that the flea was unable to digest the meal. Consequently, the flea would become very hungry, it would jump onto another rat maybe, or a human, and bite them. It would regurgitate this bloody meal with its bacteria and thereby inject the bacteria directly under the skin, which meant the human was now infected. The flea could then feed again and the pattern would be repeated. The bacteria would then spread through the lymph system, attacking the person's lymph nodes, and symptoms would appear within about 2 to 7 days. These would include swollen lymph nodes in the neck, groin or under the armpit, and this would become blackened after a time, and they were about the size of an egg. And these were known as the buboes, and they were incredibly painful. They would have been accompanied by headaches, vomiting, fever, and coughing up blood in the later stages. Plague was so feared because it came on very suddenly. It was an ugly, unpleasant, agonising death. The fatality rate was about 70% and it could kill within hours. Most people died within about a week. Now let's look at London in 1665 for a moment. What was the city like? Well, this was a city which had grown exponentially in the previous few decades. In fact, the population had trebled in the past 60 years, and that was due to immigration from the countryside, and also further afield. It was already quite a diverse community. The streets were narrow and haphazard. The buildings were timber framed. They were filthy streets, and there were no pavements at this time. In this densely populated city, daily life was very fast-paced, and sources say that Londoners were known to sort of push and shove as they went about their business, and apparently they even at that time had a reputation for walking very fast. Animals even outnumbered humans. There were dogs, there were cats, there were farm animals being brought in from the country for slaughter. And the stench of the streets could be overpowering. This was a place where disease could thrive. We actually have a good understanding of the diseases that afflicted the people of the 17th century London due to handbills of the day, and these were called bills of mortality, and they were actually a really important part of city life. Each week there were 120 parishes, and the parish clerks for each parish would collect and submit data, and that included the number and causes of death for the week, burial information, other details, and then this would be compiled into a handbill that would be sold for a penny in the streets, and it would allow Londoners to keep an eye on feared diseases, particularly plague. Now, how and where did this particular outbreak begin? Well, the winter of 1665 had been very, very harsh. The River Thames had been frozen over, and this was the second year running. But by spring 1665, there was a general feeling of foreboding, I suppose. They were a superstitious people, and the presence of two comets in the sky, one in 1664 and one in 1665, was seen as an ill omen. There had been a recent outbreak of plague in Amsterdam. Probably this had come sort of through Turkey and on. And Londoners were aware it may not be long before this contagious disease got to them. And it was in the spring that the first case of plague was recorded in the parish of St Giles in the Fields, which is near Covent Garden. The following week, two more cases were recorded. No one was panicking yet, but in early May, the authorities were getting concerned, and plague orders were issued by each parish on the instruction of the Lord Mayor. And this was to try and prevent the spread of infection. It included banning public gatherings. And one of the orders was that cats and dogs should be exterminated. Basically, it was believed that disease clung to their coats, and it was estimated that about 40,000 dogs and up to 200,000 cats were actually killed. Horrific. And of course, we now know that this was the worst thing they could possibly have done, because the cats would have been catching the rats. Each infected house was to be immediately shut up. The door would be marked with a large red cross, and the words, "Lord, have mercy upon us," were to be written below. The healthy were to be locked in with the sick, with the ruling that any survivors were not to be allowed out until they'd been in quarantine for 40 days. Punishment for breaking that was very severe. Constables and watchmen were to guard the houses, and this was to ensure no one escaped and no one could get in. Blacksmiths were hired to padlock the doors. Nurses were employed to visit and take care of the sick in their houses. And these were sort of generally very poor, usually older women in desperate need of work. Searchers were employed, and they were to confirm the death. They had to go into the houses and look for signs of the plague for the buboes and confirm the death. And also bearers were employed to remove the bodies for burial. So amongst all this horror, there were actually new employment possibilities for the poor, and certainly grave diggers were not short of work. Spring turned into summer, temperatures were now higher, around 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and plague really thrives in heat, and the number of victims was growing. People really were panicking now. The rich left London fleeing the poor, who were seen as carriers of this disease. The court abandoned the city and established itself in Oxford. The gentry went to their country houses, even the middle classes left if they possibly could. But they were only allowed to leave if they could present a certificate of health. Even physicians, doctors left with their wealthy clients. And merchants, the providers of food, left whenever they could. And this added to a scarcity of food, which of course added to the woes of the city. And worst of all, many of the clergy fled, abandoning their flocks to this terrible fate. But what about the poor? Where could they go? Well, they couldn't flee, of course. And instead, they stay in London, terrified, awaiting their fate. They are human fuel for this dreadful disease. To their credit, the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Bishop of London did stay in London, as did the Lord Mayor of London, though he built himself a sort of elaborate self-distancing contraption, which was to keep himself safe and protect him from other people. Every day, families would be checking their bodies for signs of the plague, which they would call tokens. If the signs were found, it was meant to be reported straight away, and of course the house and the inhabitants locked up. And once locked up, of course, those inside knew that it was very likely a death sentence for all of them. And indeed, there are stories of whole families who were wiped out in entirety. Suspicion was rife at this time. Neighbours, actually imprisoned neighbours, they'd be watching them constantly, searching for any sign of unreported sickness, and they would report them when they could. The parish did try to look after its poor. There was a lot of care, food, drink, basic medical care was provided for the people who were locked up, though only the nurses and the searchers were allowed into the house. Nurses, of course, would have had no qualifications and often had this terrible reputation. But they were often these poor, sort of destitute older women and could well have been scapegoats. They were sort of a focus for people's fear. They were someone to blame. So why did Londoners think they were suffering this dreadful visitation? Well, this was a God-fearing society, and to many, plague was seen as a punishment from God, though there were differences of opinion about what they were actually being punished for. The belief at the time was that the disease was caused by miasma, and this was sort of poisonous air, poisonous vapours in the air. And pomanders with sweet-smelling herbs were believed to ward off these terrible miasmas or filthy air. Smoking or chewing tobacco was supposed to keep the plague away, and children were actually even encouraged to smoke at this time. Apothecaries would visit the sick, and they would wear these sort of oilskin coats and these terrifying masks. You may have seen pictures of them, with huge beaks, which would contain herbs that they believed would protect them from the sick. Some of the so-called cures for plague were quite bizarre. For instance, the rich might be recommended remedies which included unicorn's horn, goodness knows what that was, and laudanum, sort of opium. Arsenic was used, and even apparently applying dead animals to the skin was believed to draw out corrupt humours from the body. Lancing buboes was believed to relieve the suffering, and sometimes they'd even try to burn the buboes out. Another bizarre remedy was thought to be syphilis, and this was because they believed that one disease would actually cancel the other one out, and therefore syphilis-ridden prostitutes of the city became particularly popular and were doing a roaring trade at the time. One remedy that may actually have been effective was fumigation. As there was a commonly held belief that the plague may have been caused by miasmas or bad air, an order went out to light fires around the city, burning a mixture of sort of noxious sulphurous substances in the hope that this would drive the plague away. Now, the stench from this would have probably been so horrendous that even the rodents would have found it unbearable, and therefore it may have had some success. But unfortunately, after 3 days in August of these fires burning, it started to rain and the fires went out. On the continent, pest houses were very popular, and these were isolation hospitals. So as soon as a patient was diagnosed, they'd be taken to the pest house. However, although there were a few in London, there were not many, so only enough for a few hundred people. And most Londoners had to suffer being locked up in their homes if they got the plague. Now, the summer was very, very hot through August into September, and it was in September that the death rate increased, and it was at its peak. And at its height, about 7,000 people a week were dying. Once a victim had died, a searcher would call at the house to confirm the cause of death. And then if there were no family left, the victim's belongings were taken and sold, and the profits would have been paid back to the parish. A bearer would then arrive at night to remove the body on a cart, calling, "Bring out your dead," and would then transfer them for burial. Early on in the outbreak, the church bells were said to toll incessantly for the dead all over the city. But eventually they stopped ringing as there were just too many victims. And after this, the city was said to be silent and the streets were deserted. The churchyards became so full that they would bury plague victims on top of each other. And even today, you can actually see evidence of this in the city churchyards. For instance, if you go to the church yard at St. Mary at Hill or St. Olav's in the city, you'll see they're much higher than the road. Burial pits were dug, and whilst there are reports of bodies just being thrown in together haphazardly, the archaeologists who worked on the Crossrail excavations found that many of the people had actually been buried in coffins in quite an orderly fashion. In September, the plague had reached its peak, and with the onset of colder weather, as winter approached, death rates finally lowered. And by January, numbers were well down. Those lucky enough... Those who had been lucky enough to escape to the country began to return. And in February, the court also came back to the city. By the time the plague was all but over in London, around 68,000 people were recorded to have died. And yet, in fact, these numbers are taken from parish records, and they wouldn't have included people of non-denominational faiths, Quakers, Jews, etc. Those would have gone unrecorded. It was also believed that the searchers who went to the houses to determine the cause of death were being bribed and would often record the cause of death as, for instance, smallpox or yellow fever or some other disease, so that the family of the victim might avoid being locked up. It's generally agreed that numbers were probably around about 100,000. Now, the Great Plague of 1665 was by no means the worst, as I said, but it was the last severe outbreak to hit London. The following year, the city suffered another appalling calamity, the Great Fire of London. And although this did not actually stop the plague, it certainly helped to clear the filthy streets. And afterwards, a new London was rebuilt, which would never again see the terrible ravages of this dreaded disease. Thank you for listening.